But let's talk about the books of the Bible. Trying to learn the books of the Bible. Have you learned them yet? Let's try. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans, 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1 Thessalonians, 2 Thessalonians, 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, Titus, Philemon, Hebrews, James, 1 Peter, 2 Peter, 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, Jude, Revelation. You're doing better. You're doing better. Now, I think some of you are just going, my. And I think that the key word is to say watermelon. I don't know that. Somebody told me if somebody's trying to read your lips, just say watermelon, because there are so many words that if somebody's reading lips, that your lips move that way when you say watermelon. I don't know that, but if you want to say watermelon, that's good, all right? Let's do it this way. You do Matthew, you do Mark. How's that done? All right, ready? Matthew, Luke, Acts, Romans, 1 Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1 Thessalonians, 2 Thessalonians, 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, Titus, Philemon, Hebrews, James, 1 Peter, 2 Peter, 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, Jude, and Revelation. All right. All right, let's put the next slide up. Let's see how we do with that one. All right, you ready? That's a little bit harder. All right, let's do that one. Matthew. Only one person said the answer. I know you know the answer to that now. All right, let's start all over. Matthew, Luke, John, Acts, Romans, 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians. If you'll make that one word, you don't know how much that will help you remember these. Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians. Just make that one word. Then you don't have to remember which one comes where. It's really GEPC. If you take the first letter, General Electric Power Company. That's the way I remember. Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians. And then the two T's and two T's. 1 Timothy, 1 Thessalonians, 2 Thessalonians, 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy. And a third T is Titus, Philemon, Hebrews. And then those last seven are easy. Right? Our last nine are easy. 1 Peter, 2 Peter, 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, Jude, and Revelation. You already know the first five, and you know the last five. Don't you know the first? You know the last five? 1 Peter, 2 Peter, 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, Jude, and Revelation. And so you've only got 17 books of the New Testament. Let's put the next slide up. Let's see how we do on that one. You ready? Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans, 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, 1 Thessalonians, 2 Thessalonians, 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, Titus, that's the third T, Hebrews, James, you got the last seven now, 1 Peter, 2 Peter, 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, Jude, and Revelation. You got it? All right, let's look at the next slide. Let's see how we do on the next one. Uh-oh. You ready? That's Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, okay? And you know those last seven. You know the last seven. 1 Peter, 2 Peter, 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, Jude, and Revelation. And you know Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and Acts. So you know 10 of them already. You're going to have to learn all 27 of them. You just have to learn 17. But if you'll remember, two T's plus the third T, that's another five. So now, that's what? You got the first five. That's 15 you've got of that. And then you got all the seconds. You've got 2 Corinthians. Well, there's only those. All right, let's try it again. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans, 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, GEPC, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, two T's, 1 Thessalonians, 2 Thessalonians, 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, third T's, Titus, Hebrews, James, last seven, 1 Peter, 2 Peter, 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, Jude, and Revelation. All right, I think that's enough. Let's see if we, All right, put the next slide up. Is there a mistake on that? Have I put a mistake up there just to see if you know the order? If there's a mistake there, I did not intentionally put that. I just had to say something about that slide. All right, let's look at where we're headed in this study. And the first century churches are really, really important to us. They are really vital to us because it's where we learn about the church. When Jesus left the earth, what had he done when he was on this earth? He came to seek and to save that which was lost. What did he do? He built a church. You understand? That's when he came to seek and to save the lost. What he did, I mean, he died for us, but he built the church. And that's why it's so important that we look at these first century churches, because they serve as a model for the church forever. We're going to emphasize that a little bit later in this lesson, but you got to get that concept. The one visible thing that he left is the Bible. When the creator of the world became a human, he left on this earth the Bible. If that doesn't emphasize this point, I don't know how to emphasize it anymore. Why leave it? If it's full of contradiction, if it's a good book, that's not what it's all about. It's what he left, the visible thing that he left. And I know the church is visible, but we usually think about a circle on a chalkboard with the word church written in the middle, you know? And so this is where we are. So what we have done is go ahead and go to that next slide. What we have done is that we've instead of being able to look at every one of the churches, we took the churches of Galatia and tried to study it, because in Galatians, you study many of the problems that are found in the rest of the books. And so we need to keep that in mind. Now then, where's Galatia? Well, let's look at a map, and a map always helps us to try to see some of these things. Oh, there's Rome. That's one of the letters he wrote, isn't it? One of the letters Paul wrote. He wrote the first letter to Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts. He didn't write those. You know the eight writers of the New Testament? It's one sentence. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Peter, Paul, James, Jude, you know. If you'll just memorize that as one sentence, you know the eight writers of the New Testament. So you got Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and Acts. And then you've got Romans. See where Rome is? That's the church. It's on the map. Then Romans, 1 Corinthians. Where's Corinth? Where's Galatia? Where's Ephesus? Where's Philippi? Philippians? You know, Ephesians, Philippians. What about Galatians, Ephesians? What about Thessalonica? Is that next? No, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians. 1 and 2 Thessalonians. 1 and 2 Timothy, where's that written to? That's when Timothy's over at Ephesus. And then you got Philemon, he's at Colossae, and you got Titus and Philemon. That's where this book comes from. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, he lived on this earth. He goes to heaven. What happens? Book of Acts. While the book of Acts is happening, Paul is writing 13 letters. And that's where those letters are written to, right there. People he knew. It's just common letters that he wrote. And if you'll read that, understanding, here's the church. Paul writes a letter to them. He's preaching a sermon to them. It's about what it amounts to. And he's trying to address the problems. And that's why we're trying to look at all of these, because the churches of Galatia will really, really help us. Now, while we got the maps up here, let's locate Galatia. You see where Galatia is? It's an area. It's not, you heard about the seven churches of Asia? Galatia is not a city, it's an area. It very likely is Iconium, Lystra, and Derbe. Could be Antioch, could be all of those places. But it's a geographical area. And then there are two other places that are mentioned, and it's good to know these, and that is the churches in Macedonia and Achaia. And Achaia's down in that area. That's Greece. And so you've got the church in Jerusalem, you've got the church up there in Asia Minor, and then you've got the church over in Europe. And that's the New Testament. That's Paul and his writings, and we are so blessed to have the historical account of the life of Jesus, the history of the church, the acts of the Christians when Paul ascends, or when Jesus ascends back into heaven, and then all these letters Paul writes. It's very likely that Paul wrote Hebrews, and so instead of saying 13 books, in my mind, I say he wrote 13 and a half books, because only about half the people I know whether he wrote Hebrews or not. And so I could have, as we was putting those words up there, you know, remember we had two T's, Titus, Philemon, and Hebrews. We could have put Hebrews down there, but we put it up there, a separate one, because those were the letters that Paul wrote on that previous chart. And so that's the introduction. But it's a concept, and you've got to get this concept to be able to understand this. Paul goes out, he goes on, see the red line, that's his second missionary journey. He makes this journey, goes to all of these places, and we just have the account of his life and the introduction of these churches, and then he writes all these letters back to them. I am so amazed at how in the providence of God, every problem we face individually, in our homes, or in the church, or even with our enemies, there are letters that discuss that. Human nature hasn't changed very much, has it? The very problems they had in the first century are the problems we have today, and that's why this study is so important, to find lessons. And so we look at the lives, well, the things that are there, the common problems, Paul's authority as an apostle, the last third thing on that list, the Jewish influence from within and without that tried to bind circumcision and the old law, the Gentile influence that was worldly and ungodly, and then sometimes in the letters there are specific problems that are addressed. Let's go to that next slide. Look at it and understand. We turn our attention more in detail to Corinth. We introduced this last week. And then we want to go over to Ephesus. And we may have time, and if we don't finish, don't do this today, we may have time to go to those seven churches in Asia. That's where I would like to sort of end this study. I think that covers not all of the books of the Bible, but it covers most of them. All right. Let's look at the churches up in Macedonia. And one of those churches in Macedonia is Philippi. There's the things that are happening in Philippians. Go ahead and put the next three or four slides up there. You've got Thessalonica. You've got, they got the Berea. And then you come down to Achaia. That's over there in Greece. And you got the church in Athens. And you've got the church in Corinth. Geographically, that's the lesson. What do you know about the church in Corinth? It perhaps, as much as any epistle Paul wrote, is one of the books we study more than any of the books other than Matthew, Mark. Well, we study Genesis. We study half of Exodus. We read a few of the Psalms. And then we study Matthew. Well, let's not study Mark. We just studied Matthew. Let's not study Luke. We just studied. I'm talking about little country churches. You grow up in a country church, and what I'm talking about. We study John. All right, let's go to Acts. We go to Acts. Romans may be too hard for us, So I think the epistle that's most studied in little country churches is Corinthians. These folks here from Indiana, small church in Indiana, visiting with us, snowbirds, sort of snowbirds anyway. You know what I'm talking about. You're smiling real big. Isn't that amazing? We don't study Romans, and for sure we don't study Revelation, okay? But we study Corinthians. I think it's Corinthians that addresses more of the problems that help us today than any other book. Maybe God put it that way because that church was so immature. In chapter 3, Paul says to the church at Corinth, I wanted to write unto you as spiritual people. In the Hebrew letter, the writer says, I wanted to feed you with meat. But he said, I cannot do it, but you're babes in Christ. And because many of us are Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, skip Romans, 1 Corinthians, that's about where we are. The book we most perhaps providentially study is 1 Corinthians. Why? It's to help us grow, it's to help us get together. Okay, have that church in Corinth get started. That's important. As we talk about that church in Corinth, Paul comes to Corinth, and all of that is in Acts chapter 17. Do we have maps or the next thing? I've lost my place here. Okay, let's look at the church in Corinth. I'm not even sure what number that is. On the slides back there, it's disappeared. Your slides have disappeared. Okay, look at me, and you can see my copy of these slides, and that is. Paul established a church at Corinth. Open your Bibles. Where did it all start? Paul writes to the Corinthian church. And it's called the Church of God in Corinth. That's in chapter 1, verse 1. And so, but look in the book of Acts. That's when it all starts. Paul is on that second missionary journey. He's been up to Thessalonica. He spends 3 days there, 3 weeks there. He comes over to Berea. He then comes down to Athens, and there's that sermon that he preached. We spent a lot of time last week looking at that sermon in Athens, and then he established a church at Corinth. He arrives there, and he meets two people. Those are the first 7 or 8 verses, Aquila and Priscilla. They become great leaders in the church. Why does Paul stay with them? What does it say? What does the text say? Isn't that amazing? He's not staying in the home of Christians. He stayed with them because they're tent makers. Well, why would he stay with a tent maker? That's what he is. He's got to make a living. Now, the church at Philippi did support him, but generally in the work that he did, he didn't take support, and he worked, labored with his own hands. And so while he is at work, I want you to hear this. While he is at work, there's Aquila and Priscilla. And while they're over there cutting hides and have whatever you make tents out of, cloth or whatever, Paul is over there and there's a religious discussion that starts. And you and I need to seek opportunities to start religious discussions. How did Paul start a religious discussion in Athens? Well, he's in the marketplace, but he gets in Athens, and they take him up to Mars Hill, and he delivers that lesson in Acts 17. Remember that? As I passed by and beheld the objects of your devotions, I found an altar to whom? To the unknown God. You know how you start religious discussion with religious people? You find common ground. You know, one of the great ways to try to teach somebody is, tell me your salvation story. I'm not talking about religious folks. Tell me your salvation story. They've got one. Almost all of them do. There's some people that don't emphasize, but generally, people have a salvation story. And you don't interrupt them. You let them tell you what happened to them when Christ came into their lives. That's a start. And then you'd say, you don't attack. You don't interrupt them. You're trying to find common grounds. And then you could just say, you know, everybody's got a salvation story. Do you know there's a salvation story in the Bible? You see how we've taken this study and we've turned it all the way from where they were. Andy, when I taught you, that's exactly what I did. You're not aware of it. Here's Andy. What a great salvation story this family has. You know, sweethearts. Where are you from? From
Dominican Republic.
Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
He comes to New York, and he brings her up there. So he marries her and everything. And she's so religious, and he's not. I'm not gossiping or anything. I don't mean he's ungodly and worldly, but he thinks. I don't mean you didn't think. I want you to understand. But she's really religious, and so she keeps trying to find it. This is an amazing story. And so Andy's story. He's fed up with religion. Went to one of these big community churches, and he couldn't even get to the pastor. One of these churches got thousands of members, and he said they had bodyguards around him. He said the only way to get to him is if you had money. I mean, that's not Dan. This is somebody who's been there, you understand? And so he said, that's it. That's it. I'm through with it. And lo and behold, they moved right up here to Mystic Woods. Isn't that amazing? What an amazing story. And there's a mother and her daughter that walks down to this building and says, we live right up here. I said, could I show you the building? And so then the first thing I did was, you folks are going to hell. That's not the way you convert somebody. I didn't try to start an argument. I knew that she was religious and very interested. I said, let me show you what we do for young people. I carried them up and down the hallway. And we talked about going back to the Bible. And after talking about that and laying a common foundation, was it your daughter said? I think it was. I think she said, this is sort of what Daddy's been looking for. We got to go tell him about it. A Bible church. Common grounds. And that's what Paul did. Common grounds, the unknown God. Do you know there's a salvation story in the Bible? Now then you're opening up, and it's not my experience. It's not my salvation story. It's not about your salvation and your salvation story and my salvation story, and let's measure the one of these against the others. That's not what it's all about. Here's what they did in Bible times. And then somewhere in the midst of this, you sow the seed. Wouldn't it be great if we could all get back and have the same salvation story in the Bible? Now, you can't do that in 10 minutes. It may be 2 or 3 weeks. It may be a month's conversation trying to reach others and teach others. But you've got to understand, that's what Paul did. So he gets to Corinth, and I'm off topic, but that needs to be said. The folks he worked with knew where he was, knew what. Did you go to church yesterday? Ask your folks at work tomorrow. What happened? Well, let me tell you about what happened where we were. And then you talk about this little short, fat preacher and what he said in a Bible class, okay? You can say it any way you want to. That's interesting. That's an amazing way to deal with it. And so he, as his custom was, he went to the synagogue, and many of the, look at verse 8, and many of the Corinthians, what does it say? Does it say hearing? They believed and were baptized. What's their salvation story? Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
You tell me your salvation story. Well, I was riding and I almost had a wreck, and man, the car, you know, almost was hit head on, and the car almost rolled over, and I was scared me to death, and I asked Jesus to come into my heart. That's my salvation story. My wife was going to leave me, and she said, if you'll just accept Jesus. So I said, Jesus, I accept you. That's my salvation story. You know what a salvation story in the Bible is? Same thing. Many of the Corinthians hearing, believed, and were baptized. You know what happened in Acts 2? They'd killed the Son of God. Hearing, they believed, and were baptized. Isn't that what happened to the jailer in Philippi? Yeah. Hearing, believed, and was baptized. Why was that? Because Jesus said, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. Is that a salvation sentence? Simple subject, simple verb. You ever do that? No, I did that in seventh grade. I was learning grammar, and I learned about compound sentences and, you know, dependent clauses. No, let's talk about simple subject and simple verbs. He, Mark 16:16, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. What's the subject? Simple subject. He. What's the verb? Shall be saved. What's that sentence? It's a salvation story, isn't it? He shall be saved. Who? He who believes and is baptized. And that's what happens here in Acts 18. It's what happens in Acts 2. It's what happens in Acts 16. It's all the way through the book of Acts. It's always that same story. And so you've got to get that fixed in your heads and make it simple. Get it down where people will be able to understand it. And try not to chase rabbits, which is the thing that I have so much problems doing. Andy, I don't know how many times I got off subject when I was studying with you. But it finally got got close enough that Andy said, I'm ready to be baptized. Why? He heard, he believed, and he was baptized. Same thing about Angela. Exact same thing. Isn't that amazing? So Paul comes there and he starts the church. How do things go? Well, it must go pretty good, but there's a dream that Paul sees. The Lord says, now, Paul, don't be afraid. You got some hard times ahead of you, but I have many people in this city. And so though there is a riot that is in the city, Paul stays 18 months. I was thinking about this morning. There's a sense in which Paul was a well-known member of the church, well-known preacher. But that's only up in a certain area. Who's the big preachers in Jerusalem? It's Peter, isn't it? It's James and John, and then John's killed, and then it's James, the Lord's brother. The real big preachers in the Jerusalem church don't have anything to do with Paul. In fact, he's almost a renegade. He's bringing in all these Gentiles, and we're not even sure we want them in the church. And so here Paul is, and he disappears for a year and a half. Where's Paul? It's not like they can pick up the book of Acts. All of a sudden, we know about things happening. We have rumor here and there. I think it was over that. Yeah, I remember he went to Athens. I remember somebody had a friend from Athens, heard him preach. He's been there a year and a half. He's headed for Ephesus. He's going to drop off the map of the church for 3 years. Now, there are a lot of great things happening, but they're only known, communication not being like we have today, only in that area where they're happening. So the church starts at Corinth. And so he writes these letters back to the church at Corinth. Now, the church at Corinth has all kinds of problems. There's religious divisions. Turn your Bibles to 1 Corinthians. I want you to see how problems at Corinth address problems in our day. I want you to think about it. We talked about the providence of God and how they were specific problems, and God wrote us about them. Why? Maybe we needed to know what to do when there's religious division. Look down at verse 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 10. I beseech you, brethren, that you all speak the same thing, and that there be no divisions among you, that you be perfectly joined together in the same mind and the same judgment. How commonly is it believed you cannot see the Bible alike? I'm talking about in the religious world. How commonly is that believed? Your interpretation, my interpretation, my church, your church, none of that. I want you to hear the verse. I beseech you, same thing, same mind, same judgment, perfectly joined together. Now, why, Paul, would you say that? Verse 11, because you're not. He'd spent 18 months over there, and he gets away, and what happens? How long is Paul away from Corinth before he writes this letter? It's not something that took 5 years to develop. Because, you see, one of the problems is that we talked about this in Galatians, denial of Paul's apostleship. They did not want Paul's authority. False teachers did not want that. He says, for it has been declared unto me of you, my brethren, by them of the house of Chloe. What verse is that? Is that verse 12? I don't have my Bibles open. Paul just didn't say, now, I've heard rumors. Paul says, you know Chloe, I know Chloe, and you know what she has told me? That there are people in Corinth saying, I'm a member of the church. He writes this letter to the church of God at Corinth. I'm a member of that church. But I'm a member of the Paulite church. I am of Paul. Some of you are saying, I'm Paul. Some are of Apollos. Where did Apollos come from? Aquila and Priscilla, tent makers, become Christians and meet this man, and they teach him the way of the Lord. Very religious man, more perfectly. And guess where all that happens? In Corinth. And so you got this guy there. His name's Apollos. You know what itis means? Tendonitis, encephalitis. You know all the itis. You know what itis means? On the end of a word? Somebody tell me you've got If I ask how are you and you start telling about all the itis that you have, understand what you've got, because so many diseases end in itis, right? Itis. I'm about to give you a new word. Preacher-itis. Isn't this what's happened? Here's the healthy body. But in this healthy body of the Church of God at Corinth, we got some folks who have an itis over here. I'm a Paul-itis. I'm a Cephas-itis. I am an Apollos-itis. And then there are these others who are saying, I'm a Christ-itis, which is a whole lot better than being a Paul-itis or Apollos-itis. And here's what he says. Why are we trying to wear my name? Was I crucified for you? Why on earth would you give up the name of Christ and wear the name of Paul? I'm of Paul. Did they owe him their life? Yeah, he taught them the gospel. You're very close to the person that taught you the gospel, generally. And so, no, Paul's Cephas, Apollos, no, it's what Paul says is what Paul says. And Paul says, what's this what Paul says? Was Paul crucified for you? Were you baptized in the name of Paul? Time out. If in order to be a Paulite, I have to be baptized in the name of Paul, by the authority of Paul. To be a Christian, I'd be baptized in the name of Jesus. And the only name I can wear, think of the names of itis. We have any English itis? Where'd you grow up, Jackie? What church? We Catholic? All right. I thought it was Church of England. Where's Gene's not here today. Church of England. English itis. American itis. Is this one you'll know? A-M-E itis? A-M-E, American Methodist Episcopal. That's trying to cover them all, I think. A-M-E. Why would you not be a Christian? Listen, in the Bible, there's no such thing as a kind of Christian. You're not a Church of Christ Christian. No, you're not. You are a Christian. When people say, Dan, what are you religious? If they don't know I'm a preacher, what are you religious? I say, a Christian. You know what they say?
What kind?
What kind? You know my answer? And I say it with a smile. I'm a pretty good one. Who baptized you? Well, you mean who did the preaching or who did the immersing? I remember talking to Ron Coleman way back when I first met Ron, and I did mission work together for 10 years over in New Zealand. And Ron said, who baptized you? E.J. Emerson or was it, E. Winston Burton? He said, well, one did the preaching, the other did the immersion, okay? Emerson J. Estes, I guess it is, was the guy who was doing the preaching. That's funny. Ron said, who baptized you? I couldn't remember. And well, I did. Obviously, I did. Remember, I still do. But I'm not an Emersonite. I remember a young man, I was at Fried Hardam, and he said, I'm going to believe this doctrine as long as Brother so-and-so believes it. There are not to be a single doctrine that you believe because Dan believes it and Dan's preached it and Dan's taught it, or because David believes it and David teaches it and you've heard him teach it. There's no David-itis in the church. Were you baptized? Was Paul crucified for you? How can I elevate the name of a man or a movement or a geographical location? What are you religiously? I am a Christian. Pearl Hill and I used to do a lot of personal work together. I would study with people. I'd say, you go down to the ice cream place. Baskin-Robbins is a place folks used to go to. They got 32 flavors. Or was that Howard Johnson that had all of those flavors of ice cream? You know where all that comes from? Vanilla. You know the difference in vanilla ice cream and chocolate ice cream and strawberry ice cream? It's all vanilla. And so I used this illustration. And some visitors walked into this building and said, I'm looking for that plain vanilla church. Somebody, Pearl and I had studied with, speak the same thing. How do you do that? Speak where the Bible speaks. And don't say a word that the Bible doesn't say. If any man speak, let him speak as the oracles of God. That's not where I wanted to be. We'd have gone a little bit farther along if we'd had time to look at these slides. But I think it's been profitable where we've been today. And folks, don't you ever be thankful that and puffed up because you know the truth. Humbly thank God that somewhere, somebody in your life, there was somebody who taught you. But the thing they taught you and tried to teach you is not, I'm a Paulite, I'm an Apollosite, I'm a Cephasite. I'm a Christian. And be thankful. And with humility, you instruct others. That's it. It's a good stopping place right there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.